The Bible and Modern Science with your host, Dr. Joseph Henson of the Science Faculty of Bob Jones University. Here is Dr. Henson.
Thank you. For several programs, we've been looking in general at the organisms that are found in the phylum Mollusca, all of the shells, the bivalves, the clams, the oysters, etc., octopuses, squids, and so on. The next group of organisms that we want to look at, want to talk about, are the annelids. This is A-N-N-E-L-I-D-A, the phylum Annelida. And the word annelid, of course, means literally ring. And the organisms that are found in this phylum are the primary characteristic, the unique characteristic, the one which would immediately identify them as belonging here and not someplace else, would be the presence of these rings. There are three terms that are used to describe the rings. They are sometimes referred to as somites, or as metameres, or simply as segments. But this is the consistent characteristic that you will find all of the organisms in the phylum having. In Chandler's parasitology book, a classic, his definition of a worm is one I have not been able to forget since graduate school, which had been some decades ago. And Chandler defined a worm simply as something that was round and long and not obviously something else. And there are probably, I guess maybe 20 phyla that have organisms in them that could be referred to under that definition as worms. We have talked about two of them, the flatworms, which included the flukes and the tapeworms and so on, and the roundworms, many of the human parasites, Trichinella and human Ascaris and so on. The other of worm-like creatures that are included in the 10 major phyla, of course, would be Annelida. And then there are, most of the phyla would be minor phyla. In this particular phylum, there are, again, three classes of organisms. The first, the Polychaeta, refer to marine organisms. There is a genus of marine worms known as Neris, N-E-R-I-S, the genus name. But all of the organisms in this first class are marine. The Oligochaeta simply refers to the earthworms. And I don't know. I wonder, perhaps, if people who live on some of the islands, particularly small ones, have earthworms. Earthworms normally are going to require soil with a fair amount of food in it for them, and I don't know whether sand would have that or not. So conceivably, there are islands where there might not be earthworms. But if you don't live in a place like that, then undoubtedly I would expect you to have some acquaintance with earthworms. Here in South Carolina, often after a rain, you will see that the sidewalks have earthworms crawling around on them. And the reason simply being they're trying to avoid drowning. If you've had a persistent rain or a lot of rain, you have water that simply begins to flood the soil where they're living and cuts off their oxygen. So they crawl up on the surface in an effort to obtain oxygen. But in doing that, they also expose them to birds and shoes and a whole bunch of other things, which wipe out many of them. So even if you don't particularly care for worms or don't go out of your way to see them, there are occasions where you may find them. Now, if you are a fisherman, worms are quite commonly used as fish bait. And I was interested to find out that there is a worm in Australia that apparently is more than 10 feet in length. And my immediate response to learning about that was, here's a worm that you'd only need one of them for all day fishing. I have not been to Australia, although I would like to go sometime. And I don't know whether they use those worms as bait or not. But within the classes, as we'll see, there is quite a difference in the organisms themselves. The third class of organisms that are found in Annelida is a class known as Hirudinia, H-I-R-U-D-I-N-E-A. These, interestingly enough, include the leeches, the blood-sucking organisms, and we'll talk about those in due course when we get to them. We will not spend a great deal of time in discussing the evolutionary possibilities for worms. I don't think any evolutionists would try and argue that the flatworms have given rise to the annelids, or even the roundworms having given rise to the annelids. Because if that were the case, then the primary characteristic, namely the somites, the rings that are present in the bodies, would have to have been created some way through the process of evolution, because neither of those other two phyla have anything resembling that. So you don't usually find that. But again, you find the worm simply in nature without really any ancestor possible or any common ancestor possible. And we would simply follow the same line of reasoning that we have used in all of the other phyla. Simply for that reason, there is no organism that an evolutionist seriously would try and argue is the common ancestor for the annelids. But the annelids themselves are of immense importance for reasons some people really may not understand. But whether you simply consider them icky and want to stay away from them, or whether you use them in fishing or whatever, they are still very critical for reasons we will talk about a little bit later. If you'll recall, when we first started talking about the animal phyla, I gave you several criteria about why we would consider a particular animal phylum to be of importance. One of those was simply the total number of species. Another is whether or not the organisms were considered to be food. And here we might have a difference of opinion among folks. I will confess very freely that I have not ever knowingly eaten earthworms. Some people do, and I will not judge their methods or sincerity or whatever. If you enjoy eating earthworms, you may eat them with my blessing, as long as you don't try and force me to eat them along with you. I have no idea what they taste like. I am aware that they'd be very nutritious, but I still haven't eaten them. So that would not be a reason for looking at particular organisms here, necessarily. If they have the ability either to help or to hinder man in some way, do they destroy man's food or man's houses or whatever? Or are they parasitic? Do they cause diseases, or are they parasites? For any or more than one of those characteristics, we would consider organisms to be of some importance. And for that reason, then, as we will see, the worms are of some importance, critical in some respects that some people may not be aware of. Now, the characteristics for the phyla, when I am teaching invertebrate zoo, I try to get the students to remember preferably a single characteristic, a single unique characteristic for organisms in each of the 10 major phyla. There are a couple of them where that's just not possible, and you have to find more than one. But for all of the annelids, the primary characteristic is that one we have just talked about, the presence of the somites or metameres or segments. There will usually be some structures on the on the worm bodies that are known as seta, S-E-T-A singular, or S-E-T-A plural. These are little projections from the body wall of the organisms. They are made of chitin. And I presume this is the reason that many people try and make a connection between earthworms and arthropods. The arthropoda have an exoskeleton, a covering on the outside of the body, which is made of chitin. Now, chitin is simply a glucose molecule with some amino acids stuck on it. And since the chitin, the little projections that are found in earthworms, at least, not necessarily in the others, leeches do not have chitin present. But since they are composed of chitin, I think this is the thing that some evolutionists look at as being an attractive reason for trying to make a link between earthworms and arthropods. But chitin, when they are present, would be considered a characteristic of annelids. They do have a closed circulatory system. At least in earthworms, there are five pairs of hearts that will circulate blood around through the organism. Some of them are going to be, will have gills. If you have marine organisms, as in the case of Nereis, they have to have some way to get oxygen. So the marine organisms are going to have gills. There are some that have what are known as parapodia. These are little fleshy projections from body, usually flattened, which may be a way of absorbing oxygen and so on. They also have an effective system of removing waste products from protein metabolism, an excretory system. Now, all of those things that I have just mentioned to you, if you are seriously involved in trying to dream up the sequence from an organism that doesn't have those to an organism like the ones in this phylum, which do have it, then at every step in the process, there is the type of problem that we have talked about repeatedly. In every case, there would have to be an addition, a creative addition, to the genetic material of the ancestor, which did not have any of these structures, to the organisms that have them today. And as I have suggested often in past programs, in my mind, this is one of the major things which simply prohibits the possibility of evolution. We have not sat down and spent a number of programs specifically dealing with DNA and RNA, and we will do that at some point, although we have talked about it before. And it is a little bit difficult to teach the structure of DNA effectively in a radio program, but we'll make an attempt at that later. So we're looking at a group of organisms which vary within the phylum. They are very interesting. They are essential in some respects. They are found pretty well all over the world, both in the ocean and on the land. And they are, if you are interested in studying organisms in nature, then this is a group of organisms that is well worth your spending some time on. But as we will see, they also pose not just immense problems, but in my opinion, are simply impossible to provide an evolutionary explanation for. And for that reason, if no other, they are worth our taking some looks at.
Thank you, Dr. Henson. You may send email to Dr. Henson at jhenson@bju.edu. That's jhenson @bju.edu, or write to Dr. Joseph L. Henson, Box 34621, Bob Jones University, Greenville, South Carolina, zip code 29614, in the United States of America. You're invited to listen next time for The Bible and Modern Science.